Since the late 1980s, the roads near Williams Lake in the Halifax municipality have been treated with sand and grit in the wintertime rather than road salt. There was real concern leading up to this point that road salt applications were running into the lake and causing the deeper portions of Williams Lake to become anoxic or largely devoid of oxygen. This is a big deal because while dimictic lakes like Williams Lake and Coal Pit Lake will mix their deep to shallow waters twice a year, when an anoxic, salty bottom is created, that silty layer can simply stay there and no longer refresh itself. Replacing salt with sand and grit seemed to gradually rehabilitate Williams Lake. That is, until last January 2015, when the city again began to apply road salt to the surrounding roads. David Patrickin, a retired biology professor, took a series of deep water samples from Williams Lake last December, and what he found was surprising even to himself. The lake had not fully turned over last fall, and there was an anoxic layer at the bottom of the lake. While the tests were not conclusive, Patrickin sees the connection between resurgent road salt applications and the new anoxic layer. For more information, I spoke to David Patrickin about his recent study. For the Halifax Media Co-op, I'm Miles Howe.
I'm a retired professor of biology. I've been retired since 2008, and I spent a lot of my time just tromping around the backlands in various places around Halifax with an interest in conservation. And a couple of years ago, with Nick Hill, we did a comprehensive study of what's called the Williams Lake backlands, which is a large chunk of the backland, you know, the backlands in Halifax mainland south, and that includes Coal Pit and Williams Lake, which are the two lakes in the Williams Lake watershed. And about three quarters of that watershed is essentially wilderness. One quarter is developed, most of it lightly developed, and that's kind of the context of the lake studies.
What did you find in this most recent study from mid-December 2015?
The problem that came up that the Williams Lake people talked to me about was that there had been no salting on some of the roads adjacent to the lake, I think since 1985, you know, because salt's going to have an effect on the lake water quality. And it had been established back then that there was, when they were having salting, that it was causing problems in the lake. They stopped and they documented that it stopped the problems in the lake. So they were quite concerned that it started again, and they wondered what testing they could do. And they did a little bit, and then I looked at some of the old reports and suggested some more. And essentially the argument of the city was that the levels of chloride, which they'd measured, while they're indicative of salt pollution, if you want, aren't high enough to hurt any organism. And secondly, they were of the opinion that because most of the watershed is undeveloped, it all gets washed out anyway. But the problem that I realized right away was that you can have salt effects at levels below that are directly harmful. And those salt effects occur when there's a lot of salting. It sometimes just flows in as like a current of salty water and goes to the bottom of the lake. And if it's a deep water lake, what it can do is sit on the bottom, and then that lake doesn't normally overturn. You know, the lakes in temperate regions, typically a deep lake will turn over twice. It'll turn over in the springtime and the fall time when it becomes what they call isothermal. The temperatures are the same from top to bottom. And then it turns over, and that's a wind-driven turnover, and it reoxygenates the whole system. But the lakes stratify normally because of differences in temperature. If you add salt to it, that's a different problem because that can result in permanent stabilization. So what had happened was there was quite a comprehensive study done in the early, actually 1990-91, when they did vertical profiles in the deep parts of the lake and also the shallow. And so they documented the state of the water column, I think, five times that year. So I said, well, let's go and have a look at the water column, not thinking we'd find an effect at that time, but that it would be a baseline for further studies. And essentially went out, and I was really surprised. I dropped the probe onto the bottom, and it read 10% oxygen. Like I did it about six times. I couldn't believe it. Anyway, that turned out to be the case, that on December the 7th, when the lake should have long turned over, and it did turn over in 1990 at that time, there was a kind of salty layer on the bottom that had very low oxygen. So that provide some tentative evidence that the salt is having an effect. There's some other complications there, and it really needs to be followed up at different times. But nevertheless, very, very concerning, and regardless of the cause, makes the lake especially sensitive to salt. Then the other thing I did was I went around. Williams Lake had been documented fairly well, but they hadn't documented the water coming in from the undeveloped land. So I measured that, and it had 1/10 the salt concentration coming in from other inlets, which came from settled areas. And then I decided to go around Colpit Lake and do the same thing. And what I found with Colpit Lake, is the headwater lake, and it has no settlement on it whatsoever. I went around that lake and found that all of the water coming off the undeveloped areas is essentially pure water. There's one stream coming in called Governor's Brook, which is loaded with salt and actually makes Colpit Lake very salty. So that kind of dispelled the notion that, even though there's enough undeveloped landscape to dilute all the salt, that's simply not the case. And the other thing is that the sensitivity of lakes to this process depends on their geometry. And two factors that make Williams Lake a little susceptible to this. One is that it's relatively small, so it means you can't get a big fetch from the wind to turn the water over. And secondly, it has a relatively deep basin, and that makes it very susceptible to salt. So this is a concern. And Williams Lake does have American eel in it, which is a threatened species. It does have a pair of nesting loons. It does support a lot of wildlife. And same with Williams Lake. And these lakes, we should, with them lying 3/4 in wilderness, we should be able to protect these lakes. It's not like a gone cause. So the study, it's just one step, but it raises some concerns about these salt effects. And also, I wonder about other lakes. I mean, I have talked to other people. And yes, road salt is an issue. And I think if you just look around, I think we use probably 2 or 3 times as much as we probably actually need to. And we really need to begin looking at this issue of salt effect on our lakes, because also after time, there's been some studies done in the U.S., when that goes on for a long period of time, it actually pollutes the sediments below the lakes. And then there's a kind of memory so that even when you stop the salt, it keeps bleeding out. So, that's in a nutshell, that's what the study was about.
The implications of salt pollution for a lake, does it just simply kill the lake itself?
Yeah, no, the problem is here that in the deep basin, the deep basins of lakes, temperate lakes, are very important because they maintain cool water during the summer, be as low as 5 degrees. And it's also oxygenated water. If they're not in the polluted landscapes, there's lots of oxygen in those deep waters. And that's especially important for fishes that are like the cool water, like the trout and so on. They'll go to the deep part of the lake. And if it becomes salty and then stratifies, it'll go anaerobic. It'll go anoxic. It'll have no oxygen. So it means that eliminates that important habitat. And besides that, when it does go anoxic, a lot of stuff starts coming out of the sediments. Heavy metal starts coming out. Sulfides start coming out. Phosphate going start coming out, and it can accelerate the degradation of the lakes. So at all costs, we want to try to avoid that. Now an example is another one is Oat Hill Lake in Dartmouth, which has been in the press a bit last year, I think, because they actually installed an aerator on their lake to stir up the deep sediments. And part of that, as I understand it, is a salt problem stratifying the water there. So it's more expensive to remediate these lakes than to prevent it. We have, Halifax is actually quite exceptional. We have some very detailed studies done on 51 lakes. They were done 3 times, I think 1980, 1990, and 2000. It's a wonderful data set. And they've stopped doing that type of testing, which is a bit of fuss about. But we actually know a lot about our lakes. Mm-hmm. And there have been lots of other studies done. And this is a matter, I think, of public awareness and then, open discussion about what the real problems are and getting some actual empirical data on the state of the lakes.
Well, thanks very much for your analysis of this situation.
You're very welcome.